Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Freedom of speech seems clear and uncomplicated. It's right there in the Constitution. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. But for now, for much of the nation's history, that freedom of speech was an unfulfilled promise. There were laws that allowed the arrest and incarceration of people who were critical of the government, and those laws were upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. And one of the justices who supported the unfree speech at the time was Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr. He supported it until he was converted. And that conversion, sort of a road to Damascus maybe, created something more similar to what we think of today as freedom of speech, which was all laid out in which Holmes penned what is now called the Great Dissent. Now, Thomas Healy has written a book about that. It's called The Great Dissent, How Oliver Wendell Holmes Changed His Mind and Changed the History of Free Speech in America. Thomas, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much, David.
And we want to hear from our callers. If you're concerned about the state of free speech in America today, if you have a question about Holmes and how free speech is considered today, because it has been an evolution how we got here, call in. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. And really, that's what fascinated me and why I really wanted to get you on our program, Thomas, because the book is fantastic, and it's the whole idea. We think about our freedoms today as they have been given to us from our founding fathers, and this is how they were. No, they are actually very elastic and have changed over time. And that's what's fascinating about what we learn about in your book, and even the Great Dissent, Oliver Wendell Holmes, how he produced that. Can you talk about how the freedom of speech how it's changed?
Yeah, well, I think you're absolutely right that the rights that we have under the Constitution, they have not been static throughout our history. They've changed, and for the most part, they have increased, and we have gained more freedom over time. In some cases, because we've added constitutional amendments, and in other cases, because our understanding of earlier amendments has evolved. And that's what happened with free speech. You know, the First Amendment was ratified as a part of the Bill of Rights in 1791. And as you point out, the language is very straightforward. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. It you couldn't get much clearer than that. And yet, for the first 130 years or so, the courts basically ignored that command, and they upheld all sorts of restrictions on freedom of speech. Censorship of films and books, and street corner protests, and labor activity, and profanity, and commercial advertising, and even the criticism of the government could be restricted, the courts held, if it threatened public order and morality. And this was really the state of the law during World War I, when a large number of people were prosecuted under the Espionage and Sedition Acts for basically criticizing the government and opposing the war and opposing the draft and speaking their minds. Some 2,000 indictments were handed down under these laws. And then after the war, during the first Red Scare in 1919, there was more persecution for people speaking their mind. And the one person who spoke out against it, well, not the only person, but Justice Holmes in 1919, in the fall of that year, wrote this dissenting opinion that really laid out our modern understanding of free speech, that really sort of ushered in the liberal interpretation of the First Amendment that we know today. The dissenting opinion contained a number of phrases that have become a part of our cultural lexicon, the marketplace of ideas, clear and present danger, these concepts that we know about. We don't necessarily know where they come from. They come from this dissenting opinion that Holmes wrote in the fall of that year. And as you said in your introduction, that was a change for Holmes. Prior to that point, Holmes had never been any more sympathetic to free speech interests than anyone else on the court or anyone else on lower courts.
So how did the Supreme Court justify, because it was just 8 months before that Holmes ruled in favor of suppression of free speech, what was their logic?
Their logic in upholding those convictions?
Yes.
Yeah, the logic was that the government under the Constitution is also given the power to make war, and as a part of its power to make war, it has to be able to do what's necessary on the home front to win that war. And if people are making statements that might undermine morale in the military, or that might discourage people from signing up for the draft, or that might discourage people from buying Liberty Bonds, which were funding the war, or do any of a number of things, if people were making statements to undermine that effort, the theory was that that's a part of the government's constitutional power, and that rights like freedom of speech are not absolute, that they have to give way at a certain point. And we still believe that today, I think. There are very few people today who think that free speech is absolute. It's just that where the line is drawn has expanded quite a bit since then. And Holmes wrote these opinions in the spring of 1919 when the Supreme Court upheld the convictions of socialists and pacifists for criticizing the war or the draft. Holmes was the justice on the court who wrote these opinions. And one of the cases involved Eugene Debs, who was the leader of the Socialist Party at the time and had run for president four times. He won 6% of the popular vote in 1912, so he was not some fringe character. And Holmes wrote the opinion affirming his conviction and sending him to jail for 10 years, which is really remarkable if you think about it. It would be as though during the war in Afghanistan or the war in Iraq, if the Bush administration had tried to jail Ron Paul because of his opposition to the war. I mean, that's how severe and dramatic this wave of persecution was, and so the court simply held that the rights of free speech were not absolute, that they depended upon circumstances, and that in light of the circumstances during the war, these individuals had no right to say what they did.
And so it sounds like national security is the phrase that we hear today, and why so many freedoms are being reexamined. And so
it's the same interest that is being asserted now was being asserted then. I think there are a lot of parallels between our situation today and the situation in the 1914 to 1919. You know, there was a war. There was a lot of fear, especially fear directed toward immigrant populations.
And we had this new threat, this communism thing that was taking over Russia.
Exactly. It was people weren't certain exactly what was going to happen, and they were willing to give government a fair amount of latitude in trying to deal with that threat, at least initially. I think as time passed and more people were persecuted under these laws, there was more opposition to what the government was doing. But, you know, initially, even people who were quite progressive at the time did not object, at least not real vociferously.
Okay, we're going to get into that. Thomas, we got to take a quick break. It's just a minute long, but we're going to take a quick break. We're talking about the Great Dissent, how Oliver Wendell Holmes changed his mind and changed the history of free speech in America. We're talking about free speech with Thomas Healy. He is a law professor. He is also a former reporter who's covered the Supreme Court. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thomas Healy is a professor of law at Seton Hall Law School. He has written the book called The Great Dissent, How Oliver Wendell Holmes Changed His Mind and Changed the History of Free Speech in America. I do want to talk about the condition of free speech in America and this idea about how our rights are elastic and they will stretch and they will be compressed according to what's happening in America. They're not static. But let's talk about the dissent. How did a dissent? You know, we talk about Supreme Court opinions. He did not rule in a majority. He was in a minority. How did that change free speech?
Well, it's a good question because, you know, a dissenting opinion has no real precedential value. The way that this dissent became so influential is in part because it's so eloquent and so powerful. Holmes talks about how the best test of truth is the power of the thought to get itself accepted in the competition of the market. He talks about how we need to be eternally vigilant against attempts to check the expression of opinions we loathe and believe to be fraught with death. And so it's an incredibly eloquent and passionate opinion by someone who had not previously expressed much sympathy toward free speech. Holmes was also quite a venerable figure. He came from an old Boston Brahmin family. His father was a famous author. Holmes had fought in the Civil War and been wounded three times. And so for someone like Holmes to stand up in defense of free speech, you know, in the face of claims about national security, that really went a long way. Now, it didn't happen all at once. It's not as though Holmes wrote this dissenting opinion and the next day we had, you know, vast amounts of free speech in this country. It took a while. This was sort of the first step in that larger transformation. Holmes continued to write very passionately about free speech over the next decade. Other members of the Supreme Court did as well. Eventually, the entire Supreme Court came to embrace the principles that Holmes expressed, and the country did as well. But it took a while, and of course, it was not a wholly linear process. There were backsteps during McCarthyism, for instance. We went back to our old ways, and that's happened a number of times in our history. Every time we sort of come under pressure, every time we feel threatened, there's a tendency to pull back on some of those freedoms. And I think that you've seen the same thing happen in recent years as well.
Yes, exactly. Okay, let's get our callers in on the conversation. Our number is 614-8980, 614-8980, and Andrew has called in. Andrew, thanks for calling in. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Yeah, as far as free speech goes, it's public opinion determines what should be allowed and what shouldn't. Looking at Pat Robertson, he said some pretty nasty things about being equivocating being gay to bestiality, and he was deified and vilified for it. And looking back toward beginning of 2000, 2001, the Dixie Chicks, they came out and said that President Bush was not Texan, or he wasn't.
They said that they were not happy that he was from Texas. They were ashamed of him being from Texas.
Yes, exactly. And they were hammered on big time because the country was coming around President Bush because we just suffered a huge attack.
Right.
And so he didn't. So they were shunned and.
Okay.
Nobody really listened to them.
Point taken. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you for calling in. So I guess Pat Robertson, that's the guy from Duck Dynasty, I believe. We heard this free speech. He's not having. Is this a free speech argument?
Well, I think that there are two distinct but related issues. One is the issue of free speech as constitutional protection from governmental action, and that's really what the First Amendment about.
Yeah, it's this guy. He's not going to go to jail because of what he said. He's not exactly.
Right. These individuals weren't prosecuted for what they said. The government didn't take any steps against them. But people in society, tried to, I guess you could say, shout them down and encourage people not to pay any attention to them. And that is, I think, that's talking about free speech as a social norm and the extent to which, people should be free to say what they want without any kind of response. And I don't really think that's free speech. I mean, part of the point of free speech is that the government shouldn't limit what we can say because the best remedy for speech is counter speech. In other words, if somebody says something that we disagree with or we think is dangerous, instead of putting that person in jail, we should respond to them with more speech. We should say, no, that's wrong, you're misguided, you don't know what you're talking about for the following reasons. And I think that's actually what is, what takes place when the Dixie Chicks or the guy from Duck Dynasty says something and other people respond. They're exercising their right to free speech to disagree with him and to try to persuade other people that they shouldn't listen to the person or they should not buy their products or watch their TV show. I think that is really you know, that is just the counter speech at work. Now, you know, at some point it can be somewhat unsettling if, you know, anytime anybody opens their mouth, you know, if they're basically shouted down, then it might feel like, even though they're not being prosecuted, that this, you know, you don't have much in the way of free speech. But I don't think it raises the same concerns as the government using its power to restrict what people can say.
Now, let's talk more about Oliver Wendell Holmes and his conversion towards this in writing The Great Dissent. I know that there was quite the campaign by some young progressives at the time who really persuaded him. And that's fascinating because it certainly shows you how different the Supreme Court operated then than it does today.
Yes. You know, he didn't change his mind by himself. He was persuaded to change his mind by a group of young progressive intellectuals that he was quite close to. They engaged him in debate. They wrote him impassioned letters. They gave him books and articles to read. You know, they wrote articles themselves in publications like the New Republic and the Harvard Law Review. And over the course of about a year and a half, this sort of behind-the-scenes lobbying campaign began to have some effect. And you can see in Holmes's letters to these men, you can see him beginning to change his views about free speech. And, you know, I do think that the way the court operated was somewhat different back then. I think it was in some ways a little less formal. I think there was less concern about judicial ethics and the propriety of a justice talking with other people about cases that were before the court. I think, you know, if it came out today that there was a kind of behind-the-scenes lobbying campaign targeted at a particular justice, I think that there would be quite
like,
a bit
like
of
taking
a
justice
that.
Duck hunting or fly fishing.
Well, and that actually looks kind of tame compared to some of the things that were going on back in 1919. You're referring, of course, to Justice Scalia going duck hunting with Dick Cheney, you know, 8 or 10 years ago, which did generate a lot of attention. That sort of thing was much more common back then. I mean, when Teddy Roosevelt appointed Holmes to the court, they dined together and went to the theater quite often. And I think people would raise eyebrows.
So let me ask you, though, about Holmes and his view of the Constitution. You know, now we have a very, almost a sanctified view of the Constitution and these words. But then it was, I guess, more malleable because they weren't that far removed from, or particularly he wasn't, from the Founding Fathers.
That's true. And, you know, Holmes was an early proponent of the idea that the Constitution changes, that it evolves.
He called it the great experiment.
Document. He did. He thought it was a great experiment. And, you know, he, in a decision not long after this dissent, just about a half year later, you know, he said something to that effect. He said that the words of the Constitution, quote, have called into life a being the development of which could not have been foreseen completely by the most gifted of its begetters. It was enough for them to realize or to hope that they had created an organism. It has taken a century and has cost their successors much sweat and blood to prove that they created a nation. I mean, that's a statement that the Constitution evolves and that it grows and that, you know, those words are there to provide us guidance, but they're not, you know, they're not, it's not a code. It's not, you know, it doesn't answer every single question. Answer those questions being guided by the Constitution, but more importantly, being guided by experience. I mean, that was the big theme of Holmes's judicial career, is that what shapes the law is not logic, but experience, and the sort of the needs of a particular age. That's
right, and it's a very practical view of the law.
Yes.
And so, he had a very practical view of the rights, and so did he think that now the nation at that time had finally come of age to a point where we can withstand verbal attacks, and that we could now enjoy true freedom of speech?
I'm not so sure it was that. I think it was more that he began to realize that freedom of speech was a precondition for democratic governance, that if we didn't allow people to disagree and to challenge actions that we're taking, that we were taking, we could have no confidence that those actions are the right actions. You know, that we're always acting in the midst of uncertainty, and that's fine. But we want to make sure that those actions are as well informed as possible. And if we suppress speech, if we don't let people say what they want to say, then we can't be confident that the actions we're going to take as a democracy are the right ones. I think that's the real realization that Holmes had, and you know, he came to that realization as a result of reading the kinds of books that these young men were giving to him. And,
yes,
and the kinds of debates.
So
that
Thomas, we're out of time. Thomas Healy, author of The Great Dissent, How Oliver Wendell Holmes Changed His Mind and Changed the History of Free Speech in America. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for talking about your book and his understanding of free speech. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.